860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia.
The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list, and a Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist.
Good afternoon, Philadelphia. Welcome back to WWDB AM 860, the conservative voice. We kick off our second hour now. This is going to be an interesting conversation. I think it was April of 2023. We had a town hall, and we were joined by Catherine Austin Fitz, who is a renowned expert in money and markets and, you know, matters geopolitical and has had a long history of senior level involvement in government and then looking at it and helping us understand what goes wrong in government. So we're pleased to have her join us here today on The Conservative Voice. Catherine, welcome to WWDB in Philadelphia.
Oh, it's great to be on with you. We had so much fun at that town hall. What a fabulous group of people that is.
Oh, it was great. And you may remember we had a couple of candidates there who were the unendorsed candidates. So they were rogue, but they were great. And it's unfortunate.
The rebels.
They were great.
Yeah.
And, you know, I made donations to both of them. And, when you put up great people like that, that's what we need to do. We need to support them. And what a difference it makes.
Yeah, it really does. And, of course, what we've seen in Pennsylvania, as you know, is a constant shift toward more radicalism, more leftism, more globalist agenda. And
wait a minute. Is the population shifting or are the machines just being shifted?
Well, it's interesting you ask that.
I'm not so sure about.
I'll tell you, we were told when we watched the Republican Party and conservatives lose county after county, we were told three things. We were told, first, it was that they were bad candidates that were running. Now, we've looked at the candidates. That's simply not true. Remember, John Fetterman was elected in Pennsylvania in a statewide race, and the Democrats literally elected a dead man in 2022. So, no, it's not the bad candidates.
Not figuratively. He was literally dead.
Yeah, he died 6 months before
right.
the election
right.
and still won.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were told, well, it's mail-in ballots. Well, the Republican Party and conservatives lost the three of the top 20 counties in the country before a single mail-in ballot was mailed. And then we did some work. The groups that we work with, we're lucky to work with some just amazing patriots and just really smart people.
Right.
And we did some work and we showed clearly from a mail-in ballot effort that we put on that mail-in ballots are not making the difference. The
right.
difference is giving people
right.
a reason to vote. And then the third thing we were told was, well, it's demographic shift. Everybody's moving in from Philadelphia, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey. They're moving somehow into Southeast Pennsylvania. So one of the brilliant data guys we work with tore into that, analyzed it and came back and said, in fact, that is absolutely not true. It was not demographic shift. What's happened is just simply a takeover by the party that was not in power, and the party that was in power for 150 years yielded it without much of a fight.
So one thing I would say, I have a very long view on this because I grew up in West Philadelphia. And when I was 16, I used to date the son of a ward leader down in South Philadelphia. And every election day, he would take this huge roll of $5 bills and go out and buy votes. It was $5 a vote then when I was 16. So I was in the 60s. And, so election fraud is a problem, but, electronics and digital systems are causing a lack of integrity in every aspect of our life. But one of them is elections.
Yes.
So.
Right. And the people that we spend time with have done a lot of work on election integrity and looking at things like election outcomes. If you look at these patterns of which Republican candidate gets the most votes and which gets the last, we'll spend some time on this in a future show. But when you look at that, you start seeing that there are patterns that are unmistakable. They repeat over election cycles. They repeat across different precincts and then different counties. So it's not the
right.
candidate. It's not the geography. It's not the year. It's not
right.
some political issue.
Right.
But these are consistent patterns. And then you see occasionally a deviation from the pattern, and you begin to notice a pattern in the deviations.
Right.
So it doesn't seem natural.
And so, you know, I track a lot of the money. Mm-hmm. And so on the Salieri Report, we have a something called the Building Wealth Curriculum. And our second, there's six pillars to the Building Wealth Curriculum. And the second one is called Navigation Tools. And basically, our notion is you need an accurate map of the world. And the way we describe it is there's an official reality, and then there's reality.
Mm-hmm.
And reality is for the cocktail party, and official reality is for the management of your time and your money. And if you look at a lot of what's going on in the media, is it's all designed to get you to believe that everybody believes the official reality, when in fact they don't.
Right.
Right. So the official reality is, you know, we have real elections and they work. And reality is, you know, and this has been going on for a long time, but digital technology gives you phenomenal ability to, you know, to do it more centrally controlled and more economic to central control. And the reality is we're all grappling with the fact that we're ending up with candidates who are not who we chose and not what we want. And they're promoting policies we don't want.
Policies that are destructive. And, you know, we were talking in the last hour about the Department of Justice saying that parents who go to school board meetings are terrorists, categorizing them as terrorists officially. And, you know, you see these people go to school board meetings. I've been to many meetings in different districts, and you realize that the people sitting behind that table don't in any way feel an obligation to be responsive or to serve the public or the voters. They seem completely secure in their position. They don't feel at all vulnerable.
And above it all, they don't have to listen to you. You are bothering them.
Yeah.
So I believe, so we have a great piece at Salieri. I'm just looking for the title of it, about how to make a presentation to your school board. Called How to Challenge a School Board in 3 to 5 Minutes, and it was written by Corey Lynn of Corey Diggs. We had her do it, and what we found is it's very spotty. Some jurisdictions, the school board has a lot of good people on it. Some places, it's exactly as you described. But also, there is a way, you know, if you're on a school board, it's a lot of work for not a lot of reward. And so when people are upset and angry about something, it can be very difficult to deal with that. And so it's very, very important that you understand which you've got, just people who are overwhelmed or people who are not trustworthy, and then you use effective tactics. But where you've got good people, you know, what we've found is activists who are really respectful and take the time to learn issues and people and work with them, it's great. In the other situation, what helps is you do an audit, you find out what the mistakes and dirty money is, and then you boot them all out.
Right.
So you got to know what you're dealing with, and there are tactics to deal effectively with both.
You know, you're right, but and just having been around some of the school board meetings in Southeast Pennsylvania, it appears to me that there are certainly some good school board members. That's clear. I know one of them in one district, but by and large, these districts are really dominated by radical ideologues. They're not just sort of the little petty tyrant that feels a little power. They're really passionate ideologues who are pursuing their religion. And their religion, for example, compels them to put pornography in the schools.
Well, it's a dehumanization religion. It is a religion to remove the humanity of people.
Mm-hmm.
Transhumanism. I mean, there's been so many different words for what we're witnessing in front of us over decades, but it is the sexualization, transhuman, dehumanization of our children. And I will say that in our school districts, especially in Pennsylvania, Southeast Pennsylvania, they have been dedicated to this cause for decades.
And they've established such dominance. Go ahead, please.
Right. But what you need to understand is all of these things are tactics to build central control.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at the people who are doing this, they are being financed to do this. They are being encouraged to do this. And, you know, we have to bring up mind control and neurological weaponry. They are being brainwashed to do this.
Absolutely.
And we are up against a very well-funded and very professional effort to basically push the honest, competent people out, because all these different issues that we're talking about come down to sovereignty. Is the individual sovereignty, and then are we represented by sovereign governments? And all of these different tactics, of which DEI and things like it are a great one, are designed to use federal credit and federal money to buy us into situations and things throughout our lives that destroy sovereignty. And so the question for the rest of us is, okay, you know, they can print money and we can't. How do we get back in the game? How do we turn it around? First and foremost, by protecting our own kids and families.
Yeah, we made decisions to pull our children after 2020 out of the brick and mortar schools and do homeschool and such with them, and cyber charter. But in 2021, I ran for school board. I ran with a friend of mine. She was successful. I was not. And I think I learned that year how important the schools were to the powers that be. Out of all the races we had in 2021, if you remember, 2021 was a pretty acrimonious year. We had the ballot question about governor control. It was a really, really tough year. When I told people I was running for school board instead of, say, township supervisor, another local position, all I heard were warnings. All I heard was that, oh, well, they fight the hardest for those school board seats. And I was shocked by it because in terms of ballot placement or how important these races are or the level of impact that I thought at the time that these races or positions held, they fight the hardest for those school board seats. They spend the most money on those school board races. I mean, as a whole, not maybe individually.
Right, because there are a lot of them.
Yeah, and the absolute personal destruction that they attempt to throw at anyone who they don't agree with, who dare to throw their names in the hat for consideration, is unlike anything you see on these other races and campaigns. It is absolute destruction to make you rethink every decision you ever made to even get yourself involved. So it told me very clearly that these schools are vital to their operation. These schools and making sure that they can flood them with the ideology instead of the actual educations, and to get little soldiers ready to go out into college and beyond and show up for every protest and riot and take every position they're fed. It is a core component of their plan, is these schools. So
I just want to give a warning, because we had a huge fight in Tennessee to stop vouchers. And the reason is the people leading the effort to stop school vouchers believed that the goal of the vouchers, the way it's actually being engineered, not the way it could be, is to move this kind of control and sort of dominance of curriculum into the Christian schools and the homeschoolers. So this was the way they were finally going to get to destroy the homeschoolers and the Christian schools and the private schools that have, you know, tried to protect kids from the system. And interestingly enough, the person who was the most effective in stopping it, Senator Frank Nicely, was ousted in a campaign that had millions of dollars rolling in from a hedge fund manager, I'm told, in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
So who's big money behind the school. And you can see it's specifically designed to split the conservative groups down the middle. Certainly, that's the way it looked like in Tennessee. So, you know, I agree with you. There is a very serious control agenda rolling down, and one of the goals of that agenda is to get control of the kids. And, you know, they see that as a way of sort of leapfrogging change. You just give up on the parents and get control of the kids. And it's my issue when it comes to control is financial control, because I think they're pushing to get complete financial control in the next 1 to 3 years. And I'm always told by people, well, I don't care if they have financial control. You know, I don't care if they can see what I'm doing with my money. You know, I'll do whatever they say. And I say, really? And they say, I have nothing to lose. I have no assets to lose. And I said, you have your kids. And, you know, if they get financial control, they're going to take your kids, or they're going to dictate, you know, all sorts of healthcare mandates and other mandates for your kids that will essentially destroy your kids. So yeah, you care about central control and stopping central control by all its different means. It's just that transaction control, financial transaction control, is the meta control that's going to control all these issues. It's going to control health, it's going to control food, it's going to control, you know, education. It's going to control everything. And well, so if you look at what happened during COVID, you know, if they'd had complete transaction control and could have turned off your credit card or turned off your crypto or turned off your CBDC and you know, identified you with your digital ID, imagine what they could have done.
And when you talk about taking control over the children, specifically to that, since 2020, multiple states have passed laws that if you do not go along with whatever the ideology of the moment is, then the state can revoke and take away your children. They can revoke your parental rights. So there are laws right. in states in America right now that if you don't go along with whatever the radical ideology is and castrate your child, they will take them away and do it for you. So
yeah, this is not a random right. theory. No. This has been done.
No, it's not even a theoretical thing anymore. It is happening it's actively. It is really happening.
Okay, so let me be a bad guy because you know, I've said for 30 years, crime that pays is crime that stays.
Yeah.
And the way we got here is, you know, America is run by what I call the rackets. And there are multiple factions in the rackets. You know, but the rackets have been operating my whole life. And it's like a cancer. I see it getting worse and worse and worse. So I grew up on the streets of West Philadelphia. And, you know, my first memory is of the rackets coming in. I used to walk by four boarded up homes, catty corner to where my parents had a row house on 48th and Larchwood. And there was a big sign saying, by order of the Assistant Secretary of Housing, Federal Housing Commissioner. And we had a family of six people living across the street in a one bedroom apartment. And you have these four boarded up empty homes that I'm sure that family of six would have loved to have taken care of one. And I used to think, who is this idiot who would let this happen? And when I got sworn in as the Assistant Secretary of Housing, I said, oh, I'm the idiot. And I walked downstairs and I said to my deputy, how many boarded up foreclosed properties do we have in America? He said, 50,000. I said, that's going to change. So I realized there, you know, in 50,000 neighborhoods, there are kids walking around thinking I'm an idiot. So, you know, and I did everything I could to get the foreclosure property inventory down. And of course, I ran smack into all the mortgage fraud and the mortgage corruption, et cetera, et cetera. And so, but if you look at the crime that was going on in my neighborhood in West Philadelphia when I was a kid, mm-hmm. it's just gotten worse every year. And the people doing it, we as a society, you know, it's like the story of the crucifixion. Pontius Pilate knows it's very bad politics to, you know, to kill Jesus. So he offers the crowd an alternative. They can let Jesus or the criminal go, and the crowd votes for the criminal. And if you look at a history of politics in America, you know, many politicians will tell you it's impossible to put together a constituency that will support financial responsibility or legal responsibility. And you know, the crowd has consistently voted for the criminals my mm-hmm. entire life. And, you know, my life has been dedicated to trying to create alternatives so that we can instead of poisoning our children, because one of the biggest problems our kids are having is not just that they're teaching them how to be sex slaves in the school, but one of the reasons they're susceptible to that is literally between the spraying in the sky, the food, the pharmaceuticals, we are poisoning the children, and the chronic disease is off the charts.
Right.
And cognition is slipping, IQs are slipping. You know, recent studies show put fluoride in the water, you lower the IQ points. So the children are a target and a victim of a great poisoning. And families can reverse that if they understand it and take action. And step one is, you know, before your child can deal with all the things coming at them, they need a strong body and a clear and healthy mind. And right. the families that are doing that are making real progress, particularly if they're willing to do what you're willing to do, which is homeschool, which is a huge sacrifice and commitment. But boy, does it show that you understand what's involved in being a great parent.
Well, it was hard not to, especially in 2021, looking at the field and what was coming down and what they were pushing for. And I mean, to be clear, I think in fall 2021, we reopened hybrid. I don't even think we reopened in person. So, you know, it seemed to be the best decision. We did put our oldest back in school this year because he wanted to play football. So now I have to actively Right. avoid watching him get hit by other players on a football field. Thank God for that. So, you know, we're a split house now with an adult child and a grandkid that comes over frequently. So I know that you know, our activism at home has informed my daughter and the decisions that she's making with our grandchild. They're different decisions that even I made back when my children were younger. But just by watching, following the money, A, is such a huge thing and something everyone should do. But to look at the different poisonings and the different levels in which they're adding toxicity to our children's bodies,
right.
That, you know, is an effort for them to work through or overcome.
Right. Once you understand there's a grade poisoning, then if you sit down and radically change everything,
yeah,
you know, sort of changing your map of the world you have to go through a grief process. But once you do it and you sort of get back in the game of being healthy, and it really works, you know, it's one of those things that if you do it, the feedback loop is very positive and very fast. You just have to make that switch. So I want to talk about money for a second, because we just saw the UN use a silent consensus vote to adopt a global digital ID. And we have the U.S. pushing the real ID. And I know, for example, in Tennessee, they keep telling you have to get a real ID when you get your
yep.
renewal of your driver's license, which is not true, but they're playing the nudging game, which we know they do.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this push to get a digital ID, and the digital ID, you know, they've been pushing it in many forms. So it was vaccine passports, and it's like the 57 varieties of Heinz. They're trying to push it. They're trying to get conservatives to believe, oh, if we just get biometric surveillance, then we can tell who the good guys are, and we can make sure on immigration only the good guys come in and the bad guys stay
yeah.
out. You know, but we all just need a digital ID. You know, so you got different flavors on the different spectrums within the political theater, but they're all trying to push that because
mm-hmm.
that's what Mr. Global wants. And the reality is, if we get that system, that is the next step to giving complete digital financial control of the bankers. And once they get that, they don't need the executive branch and they don't need the legislative branch.
No.
They can run not only monetary policy, but all fiscal policy completely through the money, using AI and software and lots of rules. And the next thing you know, we've got a Chinese social credit system and we're under complete control, and then they can just take the kids. So the question I ask all the time and keep working on is, how do we stop, you know, how do we stop them between
mm-hmm.
the financial transaction control and the digital ID? How do we stop them from putting us in digital concentration camps?
As they do in China. I mean, I don't know if people really understand, if everyone really understands what you mean when you talk about a social credit score. You know, it's been talked about a bit, but it's kind of a simple concept. If you think about your financial credit score that you get that determines whether you get a mortgage or a credit card, or maybe what rate you pay on a car loan, that credit score is based on your history of payments and your ability to pay and so on. The social credit score is kind of the same concept. It's just that you get credits, in other words, you improve your score if you comply with government directives, if you behave in a way the government wants, and if you push back against any government directive, or if you voice opposition to a government position, then you lose credit points. And the result of that can be that you can't get on a bus, you can't get on a train.
Can't buy groceries.
You can't even buy goods
yep.
in stores, because they have the ability to flag someone and say, that person has too low of a social credit score. They can't do this activity or buy this good.
Yeah, or they shut off their cards.
So first of all, they call it their money, not your money. They can turn off your money whenever they want. But the other thing is, you'll be able to buy food, but it'll be synthetic lab-grown meat,
mm-hmm.
not real meat. You won't be able to have an independent business with your own income because they want to control all the income.
They hate small business.
Right. Small business, small farms, and small banks. And we know the health of a local economy depends on as many as possible, as long as they're productive and healthy, small farms, small business, and small banks. So, you know, we see a war on all three of them. And even though they're the you know, if you look at real solutions, for example, the more regenerative farms we have, the better, because the less kids will be poisoned.
Right.
The more jobs we'll have, the healthier the soil will be, the healthier the food will be, and mm-hmm. the healthier the economy will be. So, you know, but that doesn't, those things don't serve central control. They serve total wealth and they serve family wealth, but they don't serve total control. So I think, you know, the problem with the ability to turn your money on and off is with AI and software, that I can develop a plan for your management, how much taxes you pay. I can collect the taxes through your account. But I can have very complex rule systems about where you're allowed to travel, where you can go, what you can buy, what you can eat. And mm-hmm. I can mandate, you know, if I want you to take a vaccine a week, you know,
right.
If you don't do what I say, I'm going to turn off your money. And there will ultimately, I think, be no legislative branch and no executive branch, because the bankers can do everything through the money.
Well, and again, let's put a practical example in here. What you're talking about is the government decides, for example, you have to take an injection or you can't have your money. Well, they did that because they said, look, we can't stop you from working as government because, you know, that we still have the worry about this Constitution. But we can ask our friends in corporate America, who are all too happy to comply. Small businesses are a little harder, so we don't like them. But we can go to our friends in corporate America and say, if someone refuses to take this injection that we wish we could mandate but can't, you will fire them. And they said, okay, great. We'll mandate it. We'll act as the sixth branch of federal government.
Happily.
And it was the, you know, that's why when I hear the words public-private partnership, it sends a chill down my spine, because there's no scenario where the public and the private should be partnering.
No.
These are distinctly different responsibilities. They should be maintained separately. But the most egregious example of public-private partnership was that. So, yes, we're going to take away your money, not because we have the technology yet to shut your bank account, but we do have the power to use your corporation to take away your income.
Yeah.
Right. But I want to talk here about the power of the central banks.
Yep.
Because it is the central banking system that is overseeing the implementation globally. It's all public. It's in its plans. If you come to the Solari report, at the top of the homepage, we have, let me just go to it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a section called Shorties. I'm a great believer in short videos.
I appreciate that.
1 minute or less video. Yeah. And you'll see a panel on the page that says Shorty, video Shorties. It just says Shorties. And it says, a shorty a day keeps the doctor away. And in it, we have a financial transaction freedom collection. And I would really encourage you to go watch the first 3 to 5 videos. So it's at most it's going to take you, you know, depending on how many you watch, 3 to 7 minutes. And it will just put chills down your spine because central bankers are telling you what they're planning on doing.
They always tell us.
Right. And so I want to make a, you know, I want to say something that, you know, I want to basically say something kind about a lot of the CEOs and corporate leaders who were squeezed, because they weren't just squeezed by the government. They were squeezed essentially by the central bankers top down,
mm-hmm.
because I saw a lot of good companies. I have two businesses. One is the Solari Report. The other is Solari Screens. And we do investment screens. We have one called Solari World, and it's basically designed to screen out organized crime. So if you're a company that has a business model of criminal, you know, you make money systemically by criminal means,
mm-hmm.
you're off the list. And so we're trying to get the guys, you know, and so we're looking for basically productive companies that try not to break the law. And we're not looking for perfection. We're just looking for good companies. During the pandemic, I had to throw 80 companies off the list.
Wow.
Including one of my favorite companies in the world, Qantas Airlines. Qantas, at the beginning of the pandemic, Qantas had the best safety record of any company in the world. And from everything I'd seen, both as a customer and as an investor,
mm-hmm.
what a magnificently run company.
Yep.
I mean, it was just, I can't say enough great things about Qantas. When I had to throw them off the list, you know, I'm not a sentimental person. I almost started to cry. The idea that the Qantas management, okay, think of this. the best safety record of any airline in the world ever. The Qantas management were requiring their pilots to do something that if they did it would increase their chances of heart attack and blood clotting, particularly when they fly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How is that possible? Well, I'll tell you how it's possible. If you put this, see the squeeze that they were put in, this is a national security directive. Under the national security law, you must do this and you must keep it confidential. And if you don't, you go to prison.
Wow.
You know, it's that kind of pressure. What they did specifically in Australia, I don't know, but I'm more familiar with what they were doing in the United States. And the whole mass atrocity was under the governance of the Department of Defense and Operation Warp Speed. And you had the protection. I've done a lot of deep studying in my life on the classification laws and national security law, and all of this happened behind the protection of national security directives and law. And so, you know, a corporation that's publicly traded and, God forbid, is dependent on government contracts or government purchases,
right,
they're totally legally in a box.
Yeah.
That's horrible. Horrible, horrible.
And we know that in Australia, they went so far, and
yeah,
Qantas being Australian, they went so far as to create those camps,
yep,
that everyone said would never happen.
Right.
I talked to someone who travels to Australia all the time, but is, you know, pretty well indoctrinated leftist. And I said, you know, what about the camps? He said, what camps? He'd been there.
Yeah.
And he didn't know. But, you know, they were real. And there were stories coming out of them of the army picking people up and taking them. Yeah.
Oh, people did like video diaries, vlogs of their stay at the quarantine camps. They showed their food off.
Right,
they
right.
really,
he,
you know, made it look wonderful.
No, I know somebody who went to Australia to see their brother before he died. Very dear friend. And had to be in the camp for, I forget, 21 days or something.
Right, to quarantine for coming in, right? Yeah.
Right. He died a few days before they could get out.
Oh,
it was
gosh.
Very tragic.
Oh, that is tragic.
Yeah.
And,
so,
you know, it is no longer an option to just think, well, that's crazy. The government wouldn't
happen.
Do that because
yeah.
government is made of people and people are just like me and they share my values and we're all from the same country. So why would they? Well, we see now on a regular basis actions by government of all sorts or elected officials of all sorts that are not consistent with what we would think of as American values or the interests of the people being free and prosperous, safe and secure. It's common now that they take actions that are well beyond their role.
So let me suggest, because the question is, what can we, you know, let's take action. What can we do to do something about this? And, you know, because if these guys get total financial control, we're toast.
Yeah.
So I spend 100% of my time focused on how do we stop total control? How do we take action? How do we push back? And people will say, well, the odds are long. And my attitude is long odds are better than no odds.
Absolutely.
So the only conversation I want to have is how do we increase the odds?
Right.
So how do we help the local boys get back in the game? I call it the beautiful game. So it's hilarious. We're totally focused on the beautiful game. So let me talk about one thing. There's an article you can find at the Blair called Musings on DOD. You can pick it up on a search. It used to be on the homepage, but I guess it's off now. So Musings on DOD. Between we've had a financial coup in the United States from fiscal 1998 to 2015, $21 trillion went missing from two agencies at the federal government, $20 trillion from DOD and mm-hmm. $1 trillion from HUD. Now, let me tell you where that money comes from. It comes primarily from two sources. One is every year we pay our taxes. But the other thing that happens, the U.S. government issues treasury bonds and sells them, the biggest owner being our pension funds. So we're taking our retirement savings and we're taking our taxes and we're sending it in to finance the criminal enterprise. Okay. So we are financing the, mm-hmm. you know, the beast. Okay. So DOD of the $21 trillion, $20 trillion was missing from DOD. And in 2017, a wonderful professor from Michigan State University, Dr. Mark Skidmore, did a complete survey. I had the missing money up to $12 trillion and I tried to claw back some of mine with a common law right of offset, which I can explain. But anyway, in 2017, we published a big study, and he and his students took it up to $21 trillion. And then the U.S. government took the books dark. And since then, we have no idea how much is missing, but I can only imagine it's continued. So at the time, I kept bringing it up and bringing it up. And Dr. Skidmore said to me, why do you keep bringing this up? You know, it's not getting traction. It's not, people are not interested in this topic. And you just won't give up on it. And I said, Mark, if we don't deal with this financially, the only way that the government can balance the books is by lowering life expectancy. And in fact, if you look at the charts in musings on DOD, I show that starting with the financial coup, when it started in the mid-90s, mm-hmm. in fact, life expectancy started to fall. And what I've described in the Saleri report with the great poisoning is that was a matter of government policy with respect to many different areas. But if you look at the numbers after COVID started, the life expectancy started dropping even more dramatically, because now it's not just dropping in the lower income groups, it's everybody's dropping, and the middle class is dropping dramatically. And so the way you balance the books, if you have stolen all the money out of the retirement savings, is you simply lower life expectancy and you bring in lots of immigrants and you rebalance the books, not on the financial side, but on the human side of the balance sheet. Right. And so it's not surprising that DOD, being the entity that's missing $20 trillion, is the entity that's leading a mass atrocity that's dramatically lowering life expectancy, because that's how you balance the books.
And there were rumors, or still rumors, that the DOD was actually behind the production and creation of the COVID vaccine that I've seen out there in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never heard this lowering the life expectancy to account for the financial.
But you know that life expectancy is going down.
Yes, of
and
course.
That it's not going down right. in concert with other nations. We're losing our ranking.
Right, right. And it's accelerated right. since right. 2020, end of 2020, 2021.
Yep. And, you know,
so if you go to Musings on DOD, the three things I would point out. One is the and Gary's exactly right. The life expectancy of the U.S. is cratering, but the other 19 industrial nations are continuing to march up.
Mm-hmm.
And we are very much breaking away from the pack. That's number one. Number two, our fertility rates are dropping dramatically. And we know the COVID injection had terrible impact, certainly on women's fertility. We suspect men, but we don't know right. that yet. And the only country that's dropping faster is China, and they had a one-child policy.
Right.
So, you know, it's almost like, you know, one nation decided to just mandate you only have one child, and the other nation decided, okay, have as many kids as you want. We're just going to poison them.
Well,
poison you so you have less kids.
The other crazy thing about our birth rate dropping is they've also taught a whole generation of children that the world's going to end. We're close to cataclysm. Climate change is not worth having children. Don't have children. I mean, our children have been told
right.
not to have children.
Right.
And now we're hearing
right.
about our birth rate drop off and how that this is a problem and it will be a problem in the future. And you look back and say, well, you taught these kids not to have children. You
right.
taught them that.
So on one side, they're working to reduce fertility and childbearing medically and
yeah.
socially
yeah.
right? And on the other end, back, of course, during the lockdowns, what did they do? They put sick people into nursing homes
oh, yeah.
in New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Michigan and California.
Mm-hmm.
And New York was facing, I think, a $6 billion annual deficit, something like that. And it was a real problem because I think they have to have a balanced budget. So they just cured part of their balance problem by killing off the people that were dependent upon the state in
right.
these places. That's what that did. And it wasn't a crisis. Again, it happened. Everybody knew it happened. And it never became a scandal.
Oh, it became a scandal. Absolutely, it became a scandal. But, you know, the corporate media is not going to report on the scandal or the people realizing it's a scandal.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
It became a scandal in those who were paying attention
right.
to it. And for the rest of the world who still called them conspiracy theorists, they still aren't even aware. And Janice Dean was such a huge vocal advocate.
Here's the thing. We cannot take our pictures of the world from our enemy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
know what I mean?
They're
in
never
going to
tell the truth. Yeah.
Yeah, why would they?
Right.
This is a war. Okay. We just did a symposium called Omni War, a wonderful symposium that Patrick Wood led. I was the moderator. And it's about the weaponization of everything. And, you know, the way to win at the beautiful game, unfortunately, has to start with, you know, the fact that you have to face the fact we're in a war. Somebody's trying to kill you.
Yeah.
And you need to, you know, you need to face that, go through your grief period, and then let's play to win. Right?
The grief is true, too. There is a grief to it. And I think actually people avoid looking at the truth because they don't want to go through the grief. But like the grief is temporary and the freedom that comes after it is indescribable.
So the number one, there are two marketing techniques by Mr. Global to make sure Mr. Global wins. The first is to constantly run you around in limited modified hangouts and all these different lies so that you never face the truth that we're in a war, somebody's trying to kill you. You never go through the grief period, so you don't get to real solutions. You go to fake solutions, and meantime, you're like a frog in the pot as the water is getting hot.
And then constantly angry. They're constantly angry in that position. Continue, sorry.
Right. Right, exactly. So the number one thing you want to do, I used to have a pastor say, if we can face it, God can fix it. You want to face it because God can't go to work in our lives until we, you know, we're working on real solutions. You know, we face it, we're working on real solutions. The second thing is, the other one, and this is so powerful, it's, and I'm going to quote John Rappaport on this. He says, hopelessness is an op, and it's planet-wide.
Oh, yeah.
And hopelessness is there's nothing you can do. We can print all the money. We have invisible weaponry. We have available power. There's nothing you can do. And it's just not true.
Right.
And I'll tell you, everyone on the planet, you know, because I live part of the time in Europe, everyone in Europe would kill to have the U.S. Constitution and our financial management laws. Our Constitution and our financial management laws still, they are the most powerful weapon we have. Not just legally, but culturally and spiritually, because our Constitution and our financial management laws are a spiritual and cultural covenant, as well as a legal covenant, and they give us the power to get back in the game in a way that other countries just don't have. And that's why my attitude is: we got 1 to 3 years. Let's do everything we can to take this shot, because in the history of freedom, it always looks hopeless, and then. You know, and then because freedom fighters don't need formal laws or organizations, we can just all push together for freedom. And it's amazing how it always looks hopeless and then freedom wins.
Well, and there's something to be said about just educating the person next to you and that person, educating the person next to them. I think advocacy comes from being aware of what's actually happening. And even if all of those people don't speak up every day or don't find themselves behind a microphone very often to share what's really going on, them knowing it sometimes is enough because something will happen and they'll know the truth and not believe the lie that they're being fed because of the knowledge they've already gained. So even if everyone's not speaking up, there is, you know, if we're at war, which I agree that we are, then we're building our army as well. And we have to put as much effort into educating and making people more knowledgeable and able to fight on their own behalf and their family's behalf to build that army, right?
So here's what you can do. Everybody can use cash and checks. So they can't get complete financial control unless we have a 100% digital system. And the more we use cash and checks and back it up, you know, and get the smart, you know, whether it's the TV or the laptop or the smart, you know, get them back in the box and dial back the digital control, the digital surveillance, the digital. So one, use cash and checks. The second thing is, you know, spread the shorties around. The first shorty in our collection on financial freedom is the Augustine Carson's, the head of the BIS system in 2020, saying, you know, we can make the rules centrally and we can enforce them centrally. It's 1 minute and you watch it and you say, oh my God, this is really true.
We'll definitely share them.
Oh yeah, no, definitely share them and spread them because, you know, people are really busy. but they will watch a 1 minute video and then they realize, oh, it's real, you know, and that inspires them to use cash and checks and back up the analog system. The third thing is, if and this gets back to the kids, if you realize what they're really up to, you can just say, I am going to do everything in my power to protect my children and my family from the great poisoning. And the reason that is so powerful is when we don't protect ourselves from the great poisoning, we feed their beast. It's like having a tapeworm. So if we don't protect ourselves, then we're putting money in their company, their pharmaceutical companies, their food companies. We're feeding the tapeworm. We're making, you know, we're feeding the tapeworm what's good for the tapeworm and bad for us. So if we just stop feeding the tapeworm and try and detox the parasite, you know, we shift our money, much more money to small farms, small banks, you know, small everything, and we start to make our team more powerful. So just protecting yourself and your family from the great poisoning is a revolutionary act. And if enough people do it, it's really funny because when they started with the bird flu, every farmer I know who produces and sells raw milk says, my sales went up.
Yeah, of course they did, because we were looking for, you know, a natural alternative.
Right.
It's and wanted really to support
them. I stopped to get coffee yesterday on my way. I was in Indiana coming to Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And I got coffee from the, it was a truck stop. I got coffee from the truck stop. And I came out and I put the, I opened the coffee and put it on the front of my car. And then I went back into the car and got out my gallon jug of raw milk that I always carry with me. And I started to pour the milk in the coffee. And the guy in the next car slot, in fact, has this great BMW motorcycle. He's doing a cross-country trip. And he says, lady, do you have your own cow? So I ended up in this great conversation with him about why you want to drink raw milk. There's a video at Solari called Pottinger's Cats that shows the guy who was the partner of Weston Price, who's the, you know, the luminary behind the Weston Price Foundation, took 3 litters of cats, and over many generations, one litter he fed raw milk, one litter he fed pasteurized milk, and one litter he fed homogenized milk. You know, 3 or 4 generations down the pike, the raw milk kittens are full of, you know, bounce, and they're running around and they're jumping up and down and having fun and playing. And the other 2 litters are just like couch potatoes. They're hardly moving. And you see, you realize, oh, they knew.
There's such a war on healthy alternatives, raw milk. There's such a war on our Amish farmers out in Chester County and Lancaster County. There is such a battle. It is so hard to get healthy, not poisoned food and drinks for your family, and they are desperate to make it even harder.
Right, and that's why if we can get enough people realizing sort of what the game is, you know, the number one, I was just meeting with a group of people, leadership from a county, wonderful county out in the heartland, and I said the number one thing you need to do is you need to protect and build the profitability of your small farms and small banks.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do. And if everybody here would switch their purchases, you could do it. Now, you need to take, you know, there's tremendous actions you can take both locally at the state legislature, because under the Constitution, and I'm just going to point you to Solari again, we have a great article called Working with State Legislative Working with State.
I think it's right there on the top of your page.
Yeah, I'm just... I just got to put it.
And for folks that are listening, this is at Solari.com, Solari.com, which is the news site that Catherine publishes.
So it's working successfully with state leaders who will take responsibility. There's a PDF, you can print it out. And if you look at the Constitution, the powers of the Constitution were delegated by the states to the federal government, some of them. But those not delegated are reserved to the states. And I would argue that includes food and health.
Mm-hmm.
And the federal government does not have the right to the kind of invasive controls it's trying to assert on our local food systems. And one of the things you can do is work with the state leaders to try and change that. Here's the problem you're going to run into when you work at the state. And it's something you two both understand very well. And it was described to me very succinctly by a wonderful legislator from Northern Idaho. We have on Solaria backcasting that we did with five fabulous legislators from state legislators from Idaho, Northern Idaho. And I recommend it to you. It's a great discussion, and it's an example of the kind of great leadership you can find at the state level. Anyway, he said to me, you know, every year in Idaho, we send a dollar to Washington, and then every year Washington sends a dollar and 19 cents back. And every time I try and enforce the Constitution, my constituents make clear to me they want the 19 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the state legislators are grappling with is, how do we stop the bureaucracies from accepting terms and conditions in government and federal money that are not in accordance with state law or the state constitution or the U.S. Constitution, for that matter? In Tennessee, we had a group of legislators try to get together and talk about, okay, how do we just stop taking federal money in education so we're not forced to teach our children how to be sex slaves?
Right.
And they literally couldn't figure it out because everybody said they needed and wanted the money.
And it's true. I mean, you know, townships, states, counties, all of it. When the feds show up with a grant, they'll do anything. Yep. They'll do anything they're asked. And if you try to understand the volume of this, it's more than $1 trillion a year that the federal government is handing to these state, local governments. And every dollar of that comes with extraordinary conditions. If you don't meet the conditions.
Right. But that money comes out of our retirement savings.
Right. And
okay,
it's.
Our retirement savings buy bonds. We put the money in Treasury, and then it disappears out the back door, or it's used to engage in criminal activity against us.
Right.
And we have a couple powers. You know, we can lobby our pension funds to stop financing this game. That's number one. If it's in retirement systems that we control, we can, you know, stop financing it.
Mm-hmm.
But number two, we have the power. We have a wrap-up on taxation at the Solaria Report. We have the power, working with the state AGs, to enforce the financial management laws. Because in addition to the Constitution requires that any expenditure be envisioned in appropriation approved by Congress and then disclosed. And the federal government is in massive violation of not only the constitutional provisions related to the management of finances, but if you look at the financial management laws, which are quite good, the federal government financial management laws are quite good if we obey them. And the state AGs, I believe, have the power to enforce.
Oh, yeah.
I will give you the example of what I did to enforce when right now the missing money, I call it the missing money, and we have an entire website, missingmoney.solaria.com, on the $21 trillion missing from the federal government. There are extensive documentation and all the government documents, everything. Missingmoney.solaria.com. But when I finished my litigation with the federal government in 2006, at that point, the missing money is now $65,000 per person in America. Then it was $14,000. And at the time, and remember, the New York Fed is the depository for the U.S. government. So all the federal money rolls to the New York Fed. So if $21 trillion is missing, it's because the New York Fed was transacting illegal transactions. So let that sink in. You know, they're basically disobeying the law,
right,
and in a criminal way. So the bank that, according to the latest FOIA, has the largest percentage ownership of the New York Fed Bank, I just happened to owe $14,000 on a credit card to them. When I settled the litigation, we won the big case. We got a lot of money, and I was paying back all my creditors. And I wrote to the bank, and I said, I owe you $14,000 on a credit card, but you, as the, you know, as a shareholder of the New York Fed and an agent on depository for the U.S. government, owe me $14,000 that's missing. And so I'm going to assert a common law right of offset. I owe you 14, you owe me 14. So I'm not paying my 14. I'm asserting a common law right of offset, and I'm offsetting the 14 you owe me as a taxpayer and a citizen against the 14 I owe you on my credit card. And if you have a problem with this, here's the name and mailing address and telephone number of my attorney. I'm happy to negotiate or litigate.
Wow.
I never heard a word from them. They wrote off the credit card debt. I'm sure they got me back on my credit score, but I didn't care.
Wow.
So there are many ways to get this back. And before the Congress tells you there's no money for nutritious food or reclaiming the soil or any of these things, it's a total lie. You know, they're running the law. They're running the finances way outside the financial management laws.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can get interested in that, then we can afford to implement the Constitution, because we have a way of dealing with getting that 19 cents without basically teaching our kids how to be sex slaves.
Well, that'll be that's a valuable tactic if you have that. We've got about a minute left, Catherine. So, and by the way, if you're ever passing this way again, we'd love to have you at another town hall, because you know what that crowd is like. It's just a great interactive conversation, and they would love to see you again. And we'd love to have you back on the show. But let's clarify where people can go and find this information that you have been talking about.
Everything I've been talking about is at solari.com. It's solari.com. So it's the word solar and then just add an I at the end.com. There's tremendous amounts there. There's a lot of public and free stuff. If you want more, become a subscriber. We'd love, love, love to have you as a subscriber. I've been driving around the country doing meet and greets with everybody, and they love meeting each other.
Oh, they do.
And I love opera, so I'm well, choice.
Thank you for joining us on The Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860. And again, I hope we have a chance to get you back on the show with us. Thank you.
Have it.